Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, November the 20th, 2009. Next week is Thanksgiving and corn harvest has reached the halfway mark. Does it mean a rally is in the offing? Or does the double top in the March corn chart portend a lower market in the future? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana. Our panelists in studio today are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana. Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group from right here in Champaign, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
So let's open our discussion today with this question. Mike Zuzolo, is there a reason to believe that the price of March corn, which is at about a 15-cent premium to the December, will fail to again test its mid-range resistance, which I suppose is that double top at $4.25?
I think it will fail to get back up to that level, Todd. We're starting harvest again. The technicals, we went home this past week, pretty weak on the technicals. There's talk of index rebalancing, and maybe the wheat and the indexes will allow us to stay firm, but I think it's going to take something like another USDA report to allow us to get up to that high. 380 is a key support level in the front-end futures. If we can hold that, then maybe we have a chance to maintaining some good ground there, but no.
Jackie Vakes?
Well, and I don't disagree with Mike at all. I think you can back that up by looking at what we did this week, up 59 in beans, up a half cent in corn, and up 20 and three-quarters in wheat. Right at the moment, I think anybody who's sitting on corn's got to get some puts in place and protect themselves.
And Wayne Nelson.
Well, Todd, it's the most difficult path. The path of least resistance is not going there. But we've seen the influx of fund money do things that we didn't think would happen before. And we've got the Total Rebalancing Act that's supposed to happen the end of the year, the first of the year. So I'm not going to say no, but I'm going to say the path of least resistance and fundamentally – corn above $4 is awfully high priced.
Well, let's talk about all that money because this week the CME Group in its Friday commodity news for tomorrow, and I think this actually came from Barclays at some point, reported investment inflows into the commodities are headed for a record high of $60 billion for this year. At $55 billion, it's already displaced the previous high of $51 billion. That was set in 2006. Most did not predict the record jump in commodity prices that followed 2006, nor the disastrous fall. What does it mean this time around?
Well, I think it means that we are seeing people say that they're not confident in the dollar. They'd rather have hard commodities. And we've seen gold set new all-time highs. We see silver just going through the roof. We see the dollar being trampled upon or not being in favor at all as far as world currencies go, Todd. So along with that, we have seen stuff go above what we considered fundamentally resistance points or fundamentally sound numbers where exports will continue to roll. And I'm afraid that just like the last time, we're going to see the basis get wider and wider if this continues to happen.
Do you agree?
You know, I would have to say that on the basis getting wider, it's been a strange week. We went up 59 cents on beans and we actually had the highest basis on the cash side, highest cash in the last 10 weeks, highest basis in the last 4 weeks. So it kind of you know, I think the danger is there that they'll widen, that they can widen the basis. But for right now, that's not the trend that we're following, even with this investment. So to me, that says that there's still tremendous demand for beans.
Mike, on Friday afternoon, we talked about beans and why you thought maybe they jumped and what happened in the marketplace. You discussed a bit of a bottleneck that was on the Mississippi River at one point. Explain that to me, please.
Well, the barges were just not available on both the Ohio and the Mississippi, and clients I spoke to in those locations were telling me how they went from positive 15 to 40 under within a 3 or 4 day time span, and elevators, commercials just physically shutting down, not taking beans. And so it was a bottleneck. I think, like I said on Friday, it was more of a supply-minded market going into the first of the week, but by the time we got to the end of the week, the market was much more concerned about demand because of China's demand continuing and the great crushing margins domestically. But I guess on the fund side of the equation, Todd, I think we're in a lot different economic environment than 06 and 07. I think if holiday shopping is not very good, I don't think we have the inflows coming as soon as everybody thinks. And, you know, it's interesting because this past week Japan came out and said they're back into deflation for the first time since 2006. So we've got inflation expectations into the market and into asset prices, but we don't have the demand to back up the inflation yet.
We've been a bit of every place so far, so let's continue to hop around and then we'll get right back into the marketplace. Jackie, you were at the USDA Data Users meeting a few weeks ago. And with about a half a crop, corn crop that is, left in the field, there's a lot of folks wondering what the agents will do to handle it as we go through December and then the final numbers in January, and how the statisticians might count a corn crop that's still yet to be combined.
Well, I think we have to start first from the standpoint that it's pretty well held that this November report isn't as accurate as most October reports are, just because we did not have a crop that was mature enough. And at the meeting, we spent a great deal of time talking about how they're going to handle anything that is standing out there beyond November 30th, because that is when they start to accumulate their numbers. Their way of doing it is they're going to treat it as if it's in a farmer's bin. And the next question, of course, has to be, well, how are you going to determine what the yield is on that? You know, if you're going to do it and handle it that way. And their answer came back at, we'll ask the farmer. That's what we're going to do. We're going to base it on what the farmer tells us, and then we're going to have to resurvey. They're going to be out resurveying again right now, because there just wasn't enough crop harvested again. This is the first time, this report that we just had, 54% harvested, is the first time that they're actually released from having to give us crop ratings. Because normally they give crop ratings until 50% is harvested. So this has been a year that they've never seen before, pretty much up in arms everywhere, you know, because there's just so much indecision. And it's the first time that I can remember that they had their field guys come in and spend two extra days in Chicago doing nothing but talking about the corn crop and what's going to happen with the corn crop because of test weight and quality.
Are we or are we not convinced across the board that USDA can actually get a handle on the size, not of the crop that was in the field, but of the crop that will be put into the bin? And I think those are probably, they could be two different things entirely, mm-hmm. depending on what happens here. Do you think they can do that, Mike?
I don't think they have any idea right now. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to have to wait to the December monthly report and then look at the December quarterly grain stocks report and see how big of a discrepancy there is there before we can even get any kind of statistical handle on it.
Anybody else?
Well, I agree with that. And that was one of the things we talked about, is how are they going to handle it on the quarterly grain report. And on the quarterly grain report, it's still going to be handled like it's in the farmer's bin. And so that could really skew the report at the same time. So I really think when you look at this report, you start to look at everything that's coming down the pike. We probably aren't going to really have a true handle on what this year's crop is till next October.
But don't we use the grain stocks report to get a handle on what disappearance is?
You'll get commercial versus farmer. So, I mean, you'll get a bearing. But, I don't know how they're going to handle the low test weights. Wayne, you've probably experienced this too since we're so close in proximity. But the test weights seem to be a real concern in the, you know, Indiana area too.
Well, you know, we have seen lower test weights than what we've been expecting in some areas, but yet even with the lower test weights, we're getting some fairly good yields out there. The question that I have more so is, lower test weight corn doesn't store as well, and what can we maybe do on that? We're still seeing the yields. I think that we know, unless we have some tremendously bad weather, we're going to be able to adjust because of weather conditions. We know about what percentage loss there is for leaving corn out an extra month or in snow and whatever along mm-hmm. the way. we're probably going to be closer than what all of you really think, because there's a lot of years, even when it's in the bin, we sort of still seem to miss some areas. I think that ADM made a comment that the diplodia issue as far as the myotoxins is not a real case of what's left in the field now. They don't feel that that's going to be a major issue. That was one of the big things that was really bothering ethanol plants, and also as far as anybody that was a feeder out there and used the DDGs and concentrating them. So I think those things are maybe passing by a little bit, and I don't think we're going to have quite as much problem with that. We do have in the crop insurance business, some of our adjusters are wanting to say, if they have been hauling in corn and had high damage and whatever, what they're going to leave in the bin, please call your adjuster. And before December 10th, you want to have your bin done, because you can have your grade adjustments taken care of. So that's something for all of you to think about.
Well, and I think when you look at the big picture is the corn, the demand for corn is across the whole corn belt. And it's easy for us sitting here in Illinois to not realize there's a lot of states that don't have a single corn dryer in them. You know, you're talking about, I have a fellow in Kansas right now. He's down to the last 1,800 acres of his corn, and it's at 20% or above. He doesn't know what to do. They're running into a time of the year that just doesn't work for them. And so how fast this crop's going to be able to come in is going to be a big issue. But you saw the adjustments that they made on Illinois and Iowa yields on this last report. That is a partial reflection of test weights. And we're here now. Consistent test weights coming out of Iowa at 50 to 52 pound bushel weight. That's a big failure on their part.
And they're used to 58s.
58, some 60s. And even out of Nebraska, you're talking 54s off their irrigated land, where you normally are looking at 58 and 60.
Yet you all told me that you didn't think that we could push the marketplace for March corn through that double top.
I think the best way to categorize it for me is you got to feed the bull here, in my mind. I think the index rebalancing is certainly something to watch out for. But other than that, do we have anything to feed the bull? Because we are up there in terms of price levels right now. And it bases the demand that we've been seeing in the export market.
No, you know, well, I really want to follow Feed the Bowl up with something else, but I'm not going to.
Well, I think, you know, I think Mike's right about feeding the bowl. The key still comes down to, it doesn't make a difference what's going on out in the countryside. The dollar and crude have been driving this market along with the investment of outside money. And you see it in corn especially. Crude has taken a lot of money out of corn at times.
Well, yeah, therein lies the secondary question. Are you all watching? I know you watch crude, but have you gone back and looked at how crude moves through its seasonals with corn hooked to it? And does that make a difference in the way you think about marketing corn at this point? Because if ethanol and corn are that connected to crude, and they seem to be, wouldn't it make some sense that corn seasonals might change to reflect the it being a product or an input product for energy?
There's a lag there. Seasonally, from the fourth quarter into this first quarter, the ethanol gains profit margin against the unleaded. But with the unleaded going down, and that's usually because the unleaded's going down, mm-hmm. and with it the crude oil and the ethanol price. And so when RBOB goes down and crude oil goes down, that hurts the corn price. But then, because the profit margins to blend ethanol are good, you start to see the consumption and the feed and the grind go up for the corn. And so then you come around in the second quarter, and that is reflected in the numbers.
All right. Speaking of numbers, let's go through these numbers very quickly, because I haven't given them to you. You got a few of them from Jackie earlier. December corn this week, a 409 and a half top, a bottom at 389, settled a half cent higher at 491. December 10 corn at 433, a penny and a half lower. December wheat for the week, a $5.83 and a half top, a bottom at 41, settlement price at $5.59 and three quarters, up 20 and three quarters. July at 602 and three quarters, up 19 and a quarter. The soy complex, November beans, or rather January beans, $10.50 the high, the low at 991 and a half, a settlement price there in the Jans on the week to week, Friday to Friday trade, of course, for lead option, $10.46, up 59 cents. November beans of next year at 1022 and a half, up 20.25 and a quarter for the week. December live cattle settled at 83.95. They were up 62 and a half on the week. The Jan feeders at 91.67 and a half were up a dime. And December lean hogs at 57.60 were up $2.60. Soybeans, we haven't talked much about. December bean meal this week traded a high of $319.50 a ton. 320 appears to be the primary resistance point, after which the next stop looks to be about 340, followed by 350. Are end users in a position to push the bean meal higher, and if so, why?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of end users haven't covered their meal needs. So, yes, I do think they can. I think that right now, though, what we've been seeing is more short covering than anything else. And so until we finally find a way to prove that that's going to be heavy buying, you know, I'm still thinking that we're going to trade a range.
Well, Todd, I think that what Jackie said is very true here. But no, the end hog users and cattle, are, mainly the hog feeders right now, aren't in the position to want to be paying up that much for meal.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It was recorded November the 20th, 2009. We'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at what's been happening in the rest of the agricultural world around the globe. Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana, will join us. Our guests in studio today are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. All good things eventually come to an end, and the mild, dry weather that we enjoyed for the first half of November came to an end last Sunday. An upper-level low-pressure system cut off from the main jet stream meandered through the Midwest this week, bringing cloudy skies, heavy rain, and cool temperatures to Illinois. Average daily temperatures were running above normal this week. However, high temperatures varied from 2 degrees above normal in southern Illinois to 6 degrees below normal in far western Illinois. On the other hand, low temperatures were as much as 9 to 10 degrees above normal as the clouds and precipitation kept temperatures from falling overnight. The storm this week more than made up for the 2 weeks of dry weather we enjoyed. Rainfall amounts this week totaled 3 to 4 inches in western Illinois and 2 to 3 inches in a band across the central part of the state. Most locations in the central two-thirds of Illinois received the equivalent of their normal November rainfall this week. A cold front early next week will likely bring some showers to most of the state late Monday and Tuesday. That may be followed by a turn to colder than normal weather on Thanksgiving and on Friday, with the start of a warm-up possible by next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, November the 20th, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today, Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Our guest on the telephone lines today, Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading from Lafayette, Indiana as well. Hi, Jim. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here.
In your broad perspective, let's take up that question about the influx of money into the commodity markets. It looks like it will reach a record breaker this year, followed by 2006. What does it all mean to you?
Well, I'm glad you're asking me that question, because I was reading a research report, and this particular report highlighted the fact that the S&P 500 is about $9.7 trillion. The Russell 3000 clocks in about $12.6 trillion. The public owns about $7.6 trillion in public debt, while the total money market fund clock in at about $3 trillion. When you combine the corn, soybean, and wheat production and their value, it comes in at slightly less than $100 billion total. That's a mere pittance of about 0.33% in value compared to about $30 trillion in the four financial classes I just mentioned. My point is, the agricultural markets have become a focal point for asset managers, and they have so much money, money that's almost beyond comprehension, the old way of trading and market analysis that I've done for almost 40 years, in a certain sense, I've got to learn and coach my game in a much, much different way. Because literally, they can come in and push the market just about any direction that they truly want.
Jim, do you see this as a pattern that's going to last for months, years, or you know, what do you see as the end result in all of this?
Well, I really don't know the total answer to that. I mean, this has been ongoing now since about 2005 on a relatively regular basis. As we know, and I think there was some extremely good comments that all of you brought forth on your analysis from a supply-demand standpoint, but unfortunately, as I mentioned or alluded to, the supply-demand becomes kind of the tipping point of price discovery, whereas the asset flow and the money flow becomes the key drivers. And we're seeing very strong evidence of this on this last rally based upon the positions by the trend-following funds and the asset managers, and it just makes the job of price discovery much, much more difficult. And I know my staff here at Bauer Trading, we're having to spend about 25% to 30% of our time just analyzing as much as we can with the time that's available to find out exactly where the funds are either over-positioning or under-positioning and trying to basically be in the market or out of the market before they make their major moves either up or down. And it's become quite a critical factor. And if you don't analyze it and you don't get out at the right time or get in at the right time, it can be very, very costly. So unfortunately, I think all of us have got a lesson in life to learn here. This is something new. This is something that probably is going to be ongoing, but it has definitely changed the market structure.
Well, Jim, is it not just volatility as opposed to something greater than that? I mean, doesn't it just bring more volatility to the market that you're trying to deal with? Is there something broader in the way that money's coming into the marketplace or the amount of money that's coming into the marketplace?
Well, I think that's a really good point. I think what it does bring, it brings in what I would call unusual volatility based upon the supply-demand numbers. And what it probably leads to is a high degree of danger in liquidity traps. You know, this business is relatively easy to do when everything is going along smoothly and you've got relatively orderly markets. As we well know, it's the unknown factors or the factor that comes in that's a total surprise to the market structure, and all of a sudden you've got a liquidity problem where a lot of these major asset managers really not used to the volatility of the commodity market as we know it, find themselves in a trap, and all of a sudden they either start liquidating too fast and the markets become very unorderly, then all of a sudden that filters into our cash markets and we've got a very, very uncertain backdrop. So I guess I'm saying this is something we have to learn, and we have to learn how to deal with it, and I don't think it's going to be easy.
Well, I'm going to switch gears here a little bit, Jim, and you know, we've got the EPA mandate issue coming up, and it, of course, affects the world, too, because it affects the amount of corn that is either leaving here or staying here. What do you think is going to happen on December 1st?
Well, it's become a highly political issue. I mean, I think we're going to see some change. I'm not sure exactly which percentage they're going to drift to. I think it's going to happen. I think the corn market by itself is probably the most intriguing market that we have right now, in that if you look at the world grain and oilseed stocks that the USDA issued on that last report, that corn number coming in there for the 2009-2010 at 132.4 million metric tons versus the October number at 136.3 million metric tons gathers my attention and my staff's attention, because it's one of the few markets where we can see from a supply-demand standpoint that the demand is strong. It's probably a little bit stronger than we originally thought. It's fighting through this relatively large-scale harvest. But we're looking for a drop in global stocks of corn to continue to decline, and that's even with normal trendline yield crops in the four major producers throughout the world. So this market is set up to have a very, very large-scale demand base. We have not had a below trend line yield corn crop here in the United States in 12 of the last 13 years. We've been either at or well above trend line, and this market is setting itself up, in my opinion, possibly for a surprise someday from a supply shock. So, again, that supply shock would filter into the ethanol mandate situation, and I think that has to be considered because, personally, after all these years of trading, I'm finding it pretty hard to believe that we can have weather as benign as it's been this many years in a row in the month of July. And as a speculator, I guess I should clarify that. As a speculator, I'm looking for an opportunity whenever that bad weather, bad crop shows up.
Jim, going back to what you're talking about, your analysis by your staff there, what is it that tells you that these funds with, we don't know what their money is, what their individual positions are, how do you analyze whether they've overdone things or not? Just give us one little instance of what you might use.
Well, we've, for example, been watching the investor holdings in these wheat contracts in Chicago and Kansas City, and it looks to me like from the calculations that we had, we're just short of about 220,000 contracts being held by these asset managers. That's about 50% of the 2009 U.S. all-class and wheat production number, and 120% of the massive 2009 U.S. all-wheat carryout. So there's a market where, as you note, the basis levels in wheat are awful, telling us that, you know, they've got the cash price of wheat more in line with what the true supply-demand picture should probably be, but because the asset managers have come in and basically taken over these contracts, we really don't have a correct read on the market from a pricing standpoint based just on the board. So we have to be very careful in making our analysis, but we're trying to get our producers to price into this rally. In fact, we've sold our entire 2009 position in both. On October 26th, we sold the entire corn crop at 398 basis of the December futures. We sold the entire 2009 soybean crop at 1010 basis of November futures. And we sold the wheat crop at around 565 basis of December futures. So we're out for 2009. Why? Because we have got great return on our investment. We've got great cash flow for our producers. We've had relatively good yield through the vast majority of our clients. And we are scared. And I guess I don't want to underline the word scared, that the unknown could come in here and these asset managers, which have, in essentially, I think, distorted the true supply-demand picture to some degree, could flip out of here, and then we'd give away a great degree of profitability. So we've priced 09. We're looking for pricing opportunities now in 2010.
Jim, a quick final word from you on how you're going to do that?
Well, it's going to be carefully, I can tell you that. I have to be pretty impressed with this market action in soybeans. I really didn't think we could hold this value with this harvest going on like this. But when you look at those bean sales at 15.8 million metric tons this year, nearly twice year-ago levels of 8.2 million metric tons. To me, the soybean market is the complex leader. That's where our focus is. But I certainly, as you know, I watch Brazil and Argentina very closely through our scouts down there. So I've really got to stay on top of that. If I see that crop getting in trouble, I think the beans are going to move up higher. On the other hand, if that whole area of the world can produce an additional 29 million metric tons and have a great year, then I think the price of soybeans is going to drift lower.
Thanks much, Jim. Jim Bauer is with Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana. Final word from our panelist in studio, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Go Tuscola!
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson.
Have a very happy Thanksgiving.
And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, like Jim said, I think we're in a commodity bubble here now. Sometimes bubbles get really big before they pop, and sometimes they pop real soon, and I'm not sure which.
And that's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.